You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 16th, 2016. And get ready, lace up those boots, and get on the point. It's time for professional Overwatch.
Fucking sound advice. Podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation about video games. We've crawled out of our post-Trump bunkers to talk about some news-ish, hot scoopish news from the world of Overwatch.
Yeah.
A game that you and I still play with remarkable consistency.
Remarkable skill. Well, hey, I didn't say why it was remarkable.
That's true. Touche. Touche. So we want to talk a little bit about Overwatch because it was big in the news, but it took second shrift to our Nintendo conversation from last week.
Plus, we're in the middle of playing through every video game
Now. Yeah, like literally.
Get ready because the next basically until 2017 is going to be debriefs, debriefs, and more debriefs.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. A lot of good stuff, though.
Yeah.
So anyway, recently BlizzCon wrapped up, which is Blizzard's gaming con that they hold every year down in Anaheim, California. And at the convention, they made some big announcements about Overwatch. They also hosted their own Overwatch World Cup, which we wanted to talk about. They announced a big esports league specifically for Overwatch that is actually formed and different in a really unique way. We had some thoughts to share about how esports is organized and how esports is watched for Overwatch in particular. So we wanted to start off the conversation with a bang. USA! USA did not do well on that day. So Matt, why don't we just start there a little bit? So you and I, we both watched the World Cup matches, some of the World Cup matches, especially the later matches in the finals for the Overwatch World Cup. Now, to start us off, I think it's a little weird that they really embraced the world that World Cup name.
Yes.
Because these were not like esports teams. Like, these were not, this wasn't Envious.
Yeah.
This wasn't Fnatic. This Team wasn't Liquid. NIP, right? Team Liquid. These weren't all the major stars that were participating in these events. Now, the US World Cup team for Overwatch was made of team members from North America, from USA, who played on these teams. Some of the best players in the world. But they were playing with people who weren't their normal teammates. How do you think that affected like how you watched or appreciated esports? Like, does that? Because I feel like the goal here is to make it better, right? Is to build upon the national pride and excitement that you see exhibited every year during the World Cup for soccer, that is. But I'm not entirely sure it works in the esports venue.
Yeah, I was even when they were talking about it live, it was interesting to hear even how the announcers were discussing it because they were super careful to continually refer to it as an exhibition.
Yes. Yeah, they kept being like, oh, these exhibition matches, it's like it's like a little asterisk. They wanted to qualify, like, just FYI. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I understand, like, you know, for someone, for people that care enough about video games to watch a stream of a, quote, semi-professional video game being played, like, I guess you have to do that because those are the most discerning people who will immediately poke holes in your broadcast and say, like, oh, these aren't even the pros. which I did.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
But after I kind of accepted the corporate narrative of this is an exhibition, I relaxed a bit and like actually had more fun with it because they also, like when they were interviewing the players, they interviewed the people who were actual professional esports players. And some of the things they said were like, oh, well, when I knew who was going to be on the team, like our first week was just like bringing them up to speed, like team composition, like, you know, basic how-tos and to-dos of like high-level esports play. And I was like, wow, like these people had to babysit like whatever YouTube stars or whatever, like whoever else was on the, like, you know, team with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fascinating.
It's weird, too, because, so, you know, when you look at Soccer World Cup, there's a lot of national pride there because the national teams do take it seriously.
Yeah.
Like, the people who are participating in these, it's like what they dream of.
There's not a vote to be like, who wants to be on
exactly. You're not, you don't have to.
World Cup.
You never hear, I mean, I'm sure you do, but it's incredibly rare to hear a top class player go, you know, I don't want to play for the national team.
Yeah.
Because you would not be fucking welcome back to your country. Like, if, you know, if any of the number of professional soccer players denied it, they would just be shunned and shamed, right? Like, it's
you have to find a new country now.
Yeah, like, oh, okay, if you refuse to play for Spain and you know, then go back
to Portugal.
Yeah, go whatever. which is insane to me. It's insane. So there was an interview afterwards with Stur, who was one of the U.S. players, and just as an example of why I don't think this worked this year, he's was quoted as saying, "We didn't practice Anubis. We didn't practice anything. Ever since we came to BlizzCon, we didn't play one game as a team."
Wow.
He says that they had excuses for like not needing to scrim when they were finally together to play games.
What was their excuse? Like, I really need a corn dog? Like,
he says, he called the reason, so this is an article from The Score Esports, which is a website that covers esports. Mm. It says, he called the reasons teammates gave really lame and said there was one day where everyone's hands were too cold to scrim. Like, that level of not giving a fuckness, not only, of course, sets up your team for failure, but it's really disheartening as esports fans because you don't watch a competitive tournament to see people give half an effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or you do, but then they're bringing in, like, B players, mm-hmm. right? And it's their attempts to really shine. And there's a separate kind of excitement in that.
Yeah.
Or the team is working together, but they're trying out really weird stuff because they know that it doesn't matter, right?
It's still weird because it's not like so, like, the NFL Pro Bowl is kind of maligned for...
What is the Pro Bowl?
The Pro Bowl is the players that are voted the, you know, top players in the league.
So it's like the All-Star
It's an All-Star
match.
Game sure. of football, except it's played towards... Well, it used to be played at the very end of the season. Now it's usually played in between the Super Bowl and the regular season, which is dumb because then you don't see anyone who plays in the Super Bowl on the Pro Bowl because they're preparing for the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Anyway, the NFL is in tatters. That's for another that's for another podcast, though. The point is that game has traditionally been kind of maligned because the players, logically so, don't want to play that hard because they don't want to get hurt for an exhibition match.
Sure.
And so they play at, you know, 3/4 speed or half speed, you know, they don't really hit that hard or they'll go for crazy passes, you know, like they're not playing for realsies.
I mean, that's kind of happening now, right? So next weekend, I have tickets to IEM, which is Intel Extreme Masters, which is like a big League of Legends and CSGO event.
Yeah.
And several teams pulled out of the event, specifically being because they're tired. Like, they just finished the major League World Championship. It's one of the very small, like, off seasons that they get. I mean, season 7 of League of Legends, the World Champion just happened.
Yep.
Season 7 starts like mid-January for players.
So they have a couple months, basically.
The game itself is like locked into what they're calling season 7 mid to early December.
Mm.
So people who are in that competitive scene are like picking it up really, really quickly. Of course they don't want to participate in something like this.
Yeah.
Which is sort of why I think it's kind of weird that you have a World Cup that's separate from the World Championship.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, like, if you really want us to appreciate the skill on display, just ignore your natural attempts to create some weird, like, patriotic sporting event. Because it works in soccer almost as, like, an anomaly. Like, it's the exception that proves the rule that people don't really care about their national teams. They care more about the actual teams that they give a fuck about.
Well, also the Olympics, too, and, like, there's, like, a built-in but
no
scarcity.
One, yeah, but, like, no one cares about, like, shot put in the off-season, you know?
Yeah,
like, but the Olympics is the only reason we give a fuck.
Yeah, well, but I think that's... I think the... What you pointed out as the kind of perpetual season of esports is much more like... It's much more like tennis, where there are these just tournaments, and you do have top players pulling out of tournaments because my ankle's messed up, and Wimbledon is in 3 months.
My hands are too cold.
You know, that Dorito looks. I mean, I just think
I had a big lunch.
I feel like there needs to be some definition around what the season actually looks like in order to get consistency as to, like, when you're going to run these tournaments or you can just go the tennis or golf model, which is the kind of independently run tournament model with a larger, like the PGA counts points for these tournaments, you know?
Yeah.
But for this, like maybe this was the World Cup for Overwatch was a way to defend against that, because they're like, well, the pro players are still probably kind of behind closed doors figuring shit out. Let's just do an exhibition with the pro players we can get. And then because we know we're not going to get a lot, we can vote in some, like, you know, quote, some unquote, random scrubs. Celebrities, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
E-celebrities.
God, this is like...
I didn't know any of them,
it's
by
like
the way.
Dancing with the Stars, esports edition.
It is. It kind of is. But I would be more interested in them going full bore with that. Get an esports player and get Snoop Dogg.
Yes.
And team them up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Hell yes. Because, like, that is... This is like... It's Celebrity Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Now, that's funny for a different reason,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, no one watches Celebrity Jeopardy because they're really interested in, like, the questions that night, you know? They're there because they want to see people make a fool of themselves.
I want to see Norm MacDonald actually be a weirdo in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, like... So, if they had a competition that was like, it's a team of five, Snoop Dogg, fucking Kesha, two, like, YouTubers, and, like, some random guy from Philly who's, like, bronze one, you know? Like,
but then one extra guy from, like, Cloud9 or something.
Yes, and like, one actual pro.
Yeah, one esports.
I mean, honestly, I would watch a whole documentary television series. Like,
I mean, I think that might be...
I guess the name Biggest Loser has already been taken.
I think for the target demographic, which was people that know more about YouTube celebrities than I do, perhaps this would have landed a little bit
more. Well, and it lands for us, who know more about Snoop Dogg than we do YouTubers nowadays.
Right. I just think that... I think that could be something that you could actually take from this and repeat, but actually go 100% into it rather than half-stepping.
Would you punish Snoop Dogg for performance-enhancing drug use? Maybe marijuana calms his nerves.
It's an exhibition. It's an exhibition.
You know, California just legalized
so maybe
recreational marijuana usage.
Maybe if it's held,
this
if the
is
tournament
actually,
is held.
You know what?
In...
a goof become actual question.
Yeah.
Is it going to be considered like a no-no in esports held in California?
I mean, I feel like a year ago or so...
Are you allowed to be drunk on stage and play esports competitively?
Well, I mean, a year ago we talked about this because some of the... Was it MLS? Or sorry, MLG?
Yeah, drug testing.
That instituted
ESL
drug
started doing
drug ESL,
tests.
It was,
yeah.
So like... And you know, there's precedent for that in professional sports. Like, athletes can get busted for, you know,
smoking
being
that
addicted.
Tasty ganja.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that could happen. But, I mean, it's probably just about what... I mean, Blizzard will have to do that because you can't be a publicly traded company and not come down hard on the side against drugs. Like,
I guess.
I mean,
they're allowed to drink coffee.
Yeah, but I mean, coffee is not a controlled substance.
That's true. That's true. All right. I'll give you that.
Although
Sorry, Cloud9.
Blowing fat clouds.
Fat Cloud9.
I would be interested.
Dude, Cloud9 could hold their own like competitive event. Oh, they were.
That's what I was saying.
Ideas are just coming out of our minds.
I
like
would
fucking
be more
Zeus.
Interested in a fucking Blaze League of. People that just,
like everyone is high
playing Overwatch.
That's a great idea.
You'd see some guy just like looking at the corner for a while.
You know, I have actually, I mean, this is like deep internet shit, but I do remember seeing something where people were participating in like a competitive gaming event. Mm-hmm. I think it was competitive gaming. Maybe it was something else, but the team as a whole had to consume like X amount of alcohol. It could be distributed any way you like.
Oh, okay.
So like you could have one
hitters.
Yeah. So you like you could have one guy. Yeah, like your hit skin, like McCree. He's totally sober.
Yeah.
But then there's another in your team that is just like dabbed like a stupid amount
weed. The Winston is just like
yeah, it's just like really enjoying the sparkly noise that his like lightning gun makes.
I mean, I mean,
that's the risk-reward of the Blaze League.
It is true, yeah. Team Blaze It.
Team Blaze It.
So going back to the actual World Cup, I did get the sense, because there were some, you know, professional esports players, and so it was at least interesting to see, in theory, what high-level Overwatch play looks like.
Yes.
Because I hadn't actually researched it or watched it that much before.
The answer is it looks like a lot of fast-moving bright colors.
Yes. And I think that's something that we should, like, revisit, because when we say esports, we almost always mean MOBAs.
Yes, exactly.
And
Counter-Strike.
Right, or Counter-Strike, which is the other big example. But now there's going to be a concerted push for something that is quite different from either of those games.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess the question is, how do you watch multiple hours of this and not get a headache?
I mean, we've talked a little bit about this off the show, and yeah. I've talked to a bunch of like esports watching friends of mine about mm-hmm. this as well. I think it's a goddamn mess. Yeah. I don't have a good answer for it. Yeah. I find it very difficult to watch
yeah.
for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And I think there are a few reasons. One is Overwatch is a very fast-moving game.
Mm-hmm.
Counter-Strike is fast as well to some yeah. extent. But oftentimes when you're cutting between cameras, there are players that are fixed and waiting for yeah. movement, right? Mm-hmm. So the speed is in moving the reticle mm-hmm. from like the center of the screen to slightly more to the left or the right. That's yeah. where the speed is at. Mm-hmm. It's none of the physical movement of the character, right. which is really what's so disorienting in Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would be true even if all of the characters just hugged the ground, just mm-hmm. stayed stationary.
Yeah.
But you've got characters like Genji that climb off walls, mm-hmm. jump backwards, quickly spin, and then do like a sword strike to send them flying.
Yep.
You've got characters like you know, Mei to some extent, who's like first person, mm-hmm. and then she's third person because she's frozen now. Yeah. Same with Reinhardt.
Popping out. You have characters that have unconventional movements like Lucio, who's sometimes on a wall yeah, or sometimes exactly. on the ground.
Or Mercy, Farrah. Who's like looking and then like zooming to people, yeah. but healing someone else, mm-hmm. right? So the action that she's doing doesn't match with the movement of her body, which yeah. I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Of course, you've got Farrah, the mm-hmm. character who's like in the air all the goddamn time.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of really confusing high-speed movements that the first-person perspective is fundamentally flawed if you stay in there for too long.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I mean, I didn't crunch any numbers, but it feels like they're staying in the first-person perspective 80% of the time.
Yeah,
it's
a lot.
In the Overwatch
yeah.
Esports broadcasting yeah. scheme. And I think that's one of the biggest problems.
Yeah.
Occasionally, they'll zoom out,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see the battlefield from above.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually far more true to the experience of playing Overwatch yeah. in a way, right? Like, when you and I play Overwatch,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, maybe I'm Roadhog or mm-hmm. something, I am looking where I'm aiming, of course, and I'm like scanning the environment, but I'm also pretty consistently aware of like, where am I? Where are my teammates in the physical landscape? I know this map well. Where could they possibly come from, right? And in an ideal scenario, we're organizing our team in a certain way, right? Where we've got the tanks as the front line. I'm calling it out when mm-hmm. I can potentially get a pick. My healers are in the back line. There's, you know, a certain structure to how we're organized. It's especially true of the pros when they do crazy shenanigans like Anna, a Death Blossom Reaper, mm. and throw a Zarya ult out at the same time, yeah. right? That particular like wombo combo is far more readable when you're looking at it from above and you're seeing all three players do their actions individually
yeah.
instead of looking through the eyes of Zarya, now look through the eyes of Anna, now look through the eyes of Reaper.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're so fixated on the first perspective other than that's just the norm
yeah.
for shooter esports.
You can see yourself kind of maybe falling into the trap because when you're watching a MOBA, you're still watching, you're most of the time, they mess around with it a little bit, but most of the time you're watching from the view that you would be playing.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking at Overwatch where it's like, well, let's default to watching in the view that you'd be playing, but it's so much harder to jump between various characters and yeah. still understand what's going on.
Totally.
That yeah. you have to start rethinking, like, maybe, like when you watch football, you're not watching football in the view of
can
the
you
player.
Imagine? That would be know? Terrible.
Yeah, and it'd be very similar because you have to look at the entire field and you're seeing right. what's happening up and down.
I mean,
like,
you are necessarily sacrificing the visceral experience
yeah.
of the first-person perspective
yeah.
for the strategic experience, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think you can have both, but for something as fast-paced as Overwatch, you have to favor the strategic.
Yeah. And it's so fast-paced that it's hard to do, like, it's hard to do a replay. Like, if right. something really cool happens, like, it would be great to, like, scrub through and see a replay of that crazy ultimate. However, by the time you do that, so many other things have already happened.
Yeah.
So you have to rely on, A, people paying attention, and B, the commentators being able to remind you of, like, why they are in this situation.
Totally. Yeah.
You know?
The other thing that's true in MOBAs as well, I'm not sure about Overwatch, but at least in MOBAs, the analysts and the people who are shoutcasting the game are not controlling where the camera's at.
Yeah.
So there's someone's job whose whole job is to manage mm-hmm. what they see.
Mm-hmm.
I get the sense that there's just more experience in the MOBA realm of doing yeah. that in a yeah. way that's more conducive. So I think there's a lot of room to grow and a lot of learning that has to take place, and I'm sure Blizzard is working on it.
Yeah.
But my guess is at the end of the day, this is going to fall on Blizzard's organizing and training of, I don't know what you would call them, but like,
I mean, they're like camera people now.
Yeah, they're essentially camera people.
I mean, Chris Collinsworth, thank God, is not controlling the camera. You know, like, it's all right. The camera.
But they have to do this, like, in a 3D environment where it's essentially free cam. Yeah. Like, you cannot have a fixed cam. There's too many walls. Like, you need to be able to turn. Yeah. But then we're talking about, like, a cameraman with basically two Nintendo Power Gloves on who's, like, manipulating the world.
It's like Tom Cruise is,
yeah, from, like, three, exactly. It's sort of what I imagine has to happen to really create a readable experience. And that says nothing, by the way, of the inane coloring scheme that they use, the way that they highlight enemy players, the fact that those broadcasters are jumping between blue team, red team, blue team, red team, the fact that there can be two Reinhardts in a game wearing the exact same skin, two Zarya's in the, you know, like all of that stuff does not help it in any way to make it more readable.
That's the, it is. And even someone like me who theoretically plays the game and should know what's going on, like, there were those moments where I was like, why is he not shooting the red guy? And it's like, oh, wait, it's the red team.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at the red view because when you play Overwatch, you're never the red guy.
Yeah.
The other people are always the red people. So
I also find it strange that they have their names over their profiles because they move so fast that it's so difficult to read. Like, do you really? Yeah.
I mean, with Overwatch, I could see doing something because theoretically you could change characters and you'd still want to know what player is controlling that avatar.
Sure, yeah, but that's different. Like having the face of the player, which I didn't see in the World Cup.
No, I don't think I saw
having
that
the face of the player is somewhere in the screen with their username.
Yeah.
Well, so like if it's a first person Zarya, it will say like stir or whatever below. Mm-hmm. Feels like a more readable way of like knowing, oh, this is the guy.
Yeah.
Plus then you get the joy of seeing his facial reactions to what's happening on the screen. Like, oh no, I done fucked up.
It's the it's like the, I mean, that's like folding the like streaming or like Twitch style thing back into a broadcast.
I mean, League of Legends does it. I think Dota does it, as far as I understand. So it seems like that's something that would make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, even in football, right? Like, yes, you might be confused about what's going on the field, but you can see their number.
Mm-hmm.
You could see their name on the shirt. You know, like we know who the players are when they're playing.
Yeah. So maybe that's a good segue to talk about like the actual players and who they were playing. Because this was, you know, the first time I had looked too carefully at, you know, carefully enough at what people were playing and just what characters they were playing. And there was a few patterns.
The biggest pattern, it's really more of like the entire quilt.
Yeah.
Was Ana usage.
Yeah. Ana is used uniformly across the teams.
I think that makes a lot of sense. She's very strong.
Yeah. And I mean, the way that she's used is strategic because she's able to boost other characters and people are just smart about not doing an ultimate attack when you're not boosted or.
Yeah. You know. And I think this was on a patch that was basically the height of Ana's strength anyway.
Yeah.
In terms of how quickly the cooldown on her ultimate comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not surprising at all.
Yeah. There's a lot of Reinhardt, which is smart.
He's a big guy.
I saw a lot of and like the healer is Lucio. There's a lot of like, you know, there's kind of like a blanket Lucio.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Ana Lucio are your two ideal healers.
There was more Mei than I thought there would be.
Yeah.
Especially from a few of the top teams.
Yeah.
But because I know for a while we had gone through this weird little phase where everyone was just talking shit about Mei and she wasn't supposed to be good or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She, like, I enjoyed her play the most, actually. And I've actually put in a good deal of practice with Mei after watching the World Cup because of it. I think overwhelmingly the reason was because the AoE size of her ultimate, which was increased relatively recently, is just fucking massive.
Yeah.
Like, if people are coming in on a push and they have to be on a point, you can just cover almost the entire point with her ultimate, which is incredibly strong.
And people who are, like, skilled enough to do it are able to use the ice wall to cut off reinforcements from coming in.
Like, I've been practicing that as well. It's super satisfying to like, oh, Mercy is healing the Reinhardt. Now there's a divide between them and you're all mine. You're just a sitting duck.
And Reinhardt specifically is more apt to back up blindly backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't know what's behind him. There's a wall behind him. Yeah. You know, like it's just...
Got him.
Yeah. There's just a lot of cool things where it's like, oh, okay, this is what a strategic Overwatch team looks like, where there's way more they're just way more like working together than you totally. Would find. I thought that was neat.
I think the anomalies were kind of cool. Tracer being played more predominantly by the US, I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't see a ton of her, but when I did see her, it seemed like she had a pretty big effect.
Yeah.
It definitely felt like Tracer was the scalpel to whatever surgery they were trying to perform on the enemy team.
I mean, there were some locks where it's like you're always going to have like Anna, Lucio, Zarya, probably Reinhardt, and then there's like kind of a kind of cavalcade of other randos that people would throw in there.
Yeah.
I saw from Russia and South Korea specifically, like a lot of Genji. Basically like every match. And like fast Genji too.
Oh, yeah.
Like dashing straight up into the air.
Yeah, I mean the Genjis that I saw were being maneuvered on the map in a way I didn't understand he could move. I mean, I can't move like that.
Yeah.
Because they would jump off of walls into the shadow dash or whatever. And it would just project them like an obscene distance through the air to really like just wreck to the backline. I feel like one of the reasons Genji was so popular is he's so good at getting into the backline and defeating Anna.
Yeah.
He can, you know, return sleep darts at her and just really like kill those squishies very efficiently.
Yeah. One of the other cool visualizations that I saw was like how many different heroes people are using.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like the one interesting thing is that like there's a fair amount of variety, but the fact that there is variety, I think, validates Blizzard's position that this is a game where you'll have to at least play a few different heroes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about champion pool or hero pool in other esports, it's very, very important.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have what you sort of have in CSGO, right? Which is like specialists.
Yeah.
Where you have someone that's like, oh, this guy's really good with the sniper rifle.
Right.
I think you probably do have it a little bit with characters like McCree. Mm-hmm. Like you have hit scan experts on a lot of the Overwatch teams, but they're not just, no one is a one trick pony because you just can't afford to be.
Yeah. Any other like just kind of like play styles? Oh, I guess we should say that the Korean team just destroyed everybody.
Surprise.
Yeah, like prepare yourself.
I mean, when you all have the majority of your population in one city and you have a culture of like competitive gaming, you're going to make some really good teammates. I still think if you were to take the best South Korean team against the best European and the best American team, it would be a far closer match.
Yeah.
Like probably. I think, you know, Fnatic would have actually given a fight as Fnatic as opposed to as some sort of Korean or rather as some US hodgepodge of players.
Yeah. So what, you know, now that we have this exhibition under our belts, what does this mean for like the actual league that they are setting up?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the NFL is a mess because they're basing a lot of this league off of the NFL.
Yeah. NFL's a mess because of the rules and the commissioner and the horrible medical problems.
Yes, there you go.
The team composition is just fine.
Give the esports medical problems 10 That's years true. Or so.
Like the,
we'll see.
The
repetitive strain.
Weird injury. Arthritis, yeah.
I'm excited for it because the way that they're setting up the league seems like they're taking a very firm stand very early. It's not like, oh, we don't really know what esports is. We're going to wait. We're going to dip our toes in and start by increasing our prize pool. Like, no. They're like, hey, you know what? Right off the bat, minimum salaries, healthcare for everybody, which is great because the Obamacare is going to be repealed by Donald Trump anyway. What else? Like, the region. Mm-hmm. So they're creating teams and locking them into specific cities. Which I think is fucking fascinating. Like,
is there any way to really enforce that, or are they?
I think that I mean, I don't know, because part of it is we don't really have the infrastructure to have like a stadium.
Yeah.
But if you were to say, look, for online matches, you must play in a viewable arena or something within this area.
Right.
Sure. I mean, think of it this way, right? Even if they're not enforcing it, the team that's playing locally is incentivized to build up a local fan base of people who can go and see their matches, right?
Yeah.
So if there were a team, say, playing in Berkeley or something, of course they want to broadcast their event in a live venue and sell t-shirts and sell fucking popcorn or whatever, Snickers, I don't know, Mountain Dew, whatever you're eating at an Overwatch game. because it's a way for them to get revenue, right? Yeah. And revenue sharing model is sort of built into that. They want to encourage a local fan base.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to work, but I think it's a really interesting effort on Blizzard's part.
Yeah.
They're also doing permanent teams. Like, literally, something leaked today from League of Legends of, I think it was almost 20 different teams from Europe and North America who basically wrote a public letter to Riot saying, like, you were fucking this up. We're losing revenue. We're running at a loss because of fear of relegation. There's not permanent teams. Like, you need to franchise us. Man, like, that kind of, like, drama is built up in League of Legends over the years. There's concerns about, like, their salary not increasing and Shadowcast's salary not increasing and stuff. And we don't really know how much Blizzard is going to pay players yet.
Yeah.
But they've laid out a framework that is, like, clearly thought out. You know? Like, they have a tryout thing. They have, like, a drafting phase. They're having permanent teams. They're having local teams. They have revenue share planned. They are having healthcare and minimum salary. Like, all of these things contribute towards, at the very least, the sense that I get that they're taking their jump to esports incredibly seriously, and they're learning from what other companies have done.
Man, do you think that that will cut down on the... So, they are making their esports foray in... in some ways, like, highly corporate way, where, like, they're completely controlling league. They are the both the developer and the sponsor of this sport. However, do you think that also lays out an option to kind of have a less corporate oriented league once it's up and running? Like, do you think that we'll have a team called Samsung, or do you think that they'll be able to just make a team that's like the Berkeley Barbarians and they're a Overwatch team?
It's really interesting because I don't know what the rules are for other sports, because we don't have, like, you know, the Giants play in a stadium that's sponsored, but they're not
the team isn't
they're not like the AT&T Giants or whatever. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. They're never going to stop sponsorship of teams because that's such a revenue option
for... Well, plus endorsements alone, right? Like,
but I would hope that if they're going to have a local team, they would ban it. I don't want to be like, like T-Mobile Plus. The other thing, too, is if you have a permanent team, then their name should be permanent, and you can't have their name changing all the goddamn time.
Yeah.
Like, if they go from, like, the Samsung Chipmunks to, like, the T-Mobile Pink Elephants and be like, no, we're the same team because we're still in San Jose or whatever, that's not interesting to me. Like, you are removing that.
Which is a big difference from, like, how various leagues are run now. I mean... Because that, the other thing is the, I wonder if the, because now there's like weird, there's also like, to continue down the corporate rabbit hole, there's also like, esports is kind of like a weird cyberpunk dystopia where, like, the, you know, the corps are like, you know, the teams.
Yeah.
Because you're not like.
It's like they're all Judge Dredd.
I mean, you're not.
I am the game.
You're not a. You're not just an esport, like, you're part of a larger esports conglomerate. You're part of the larger Fnatic conglomerate. You might be a League player or a Counter-Strike player or a whatever player, but you're part of the larger corporate brand of Fnatic. And, like, I wonder if those companies will even be interested in participating in Heroes if it's not going to be
in
their...
Overwatch, you mean.
Yeah, sorry, in Overwatch, when it's not going to be their name on the logo, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you were to say, like, no, Team Liquid, we're actually going to call you, like, the Beavers, like, you know, like, would they even be, like, would they be cool with that?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Yeah. Like, what would the Fnatic, like, would they be the...
Would they tell their... Would they...
mean, this is a huge problem, right? Because, like, this is a very good point. Because also, some teams field... Sorry, some organizations field multiple teams.
Exactly.
Not just for different sports, but even in the same sport.
That's crazy.
Could you have the San Francisco Fnatic Bears and the Los Angeles Fnatic Tigers? Like, that doesn't make... That's weird.
Yeah.
Or would you just call them, like, San Jose Bears, sponsored by Fnatic?
Yeah.
But then, conversely, like... I mean, it's weird because at that point, those are esports organizations dedicated to esports. They're essentially like the managers. It is their team name.
Yeah.
That should be treated differently than, say, Samsung Galaxy, which is a sponsor of the team, but is ultimately the sponsor of an organization, and that's where the real management is.
Yeah.
It's not like the CEO of Samsung is, like, super involved in, like, training these dudes, right?
I mean, that's the other challenge, because if these people sign a contract for the esports org, you know, they, where does their loyalty lie? Like, you know, you're not gonna, because you don't have these like cross sport organizations in physical sports, you know, if you're, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you don't need to worry about pissing off the owner of a baseball team.
Yeah.
Because you're not a part of this meta sport.
Yeah.
You know, whereas these players will be part of, I mean, the problem is the best esports players all are associated with some sort of meta organization.
Yeah, yeah.
And that meta organization and Blizzard have to strike some sort of agreement, unless you want to start from zero and have people that are free agents.
Yeah.
You know, and like go into this.
But then you're, there's no way, because then Blizzard would be basically saying, hey, everyone who's invested time, money into this, you
we're
can't
gonna field
a
team
anymore.
Of free agents. You are not like, I mean, it goes back to like having the idea of multiple
That's
leagues.
That's crazy. They would have to sell it. But see, then like the other weird question now that you've got me thinking is who gets the prime real estate?
Yeah.
Like, who is the team that gets to be the New York team,
mm-hmm.
the San Francisco team, the Los Angeles team?
Yeah.
Right. Like we're gonna sort of automatically go into a de facto New York Yankees realm, right?
Yeah.
Where because it's the best real estate and they have the most money, somebody like Fnatic or Evil Geniuses is going to snag New York and say, this is our city now.
Mm-hmm.
We are the New York Overwatch team.
Yeah.
Period. And then the like shitty, like, I don't know, Liquid or something is going to own like Minnesota and that's not going to be fun for anybody.
Yeah.
Because that, again, like, and then you have a thing where talent and money floats into those regions and you've got a team like the Cubs who are going to lose the Overwatch World Cup every year for 106 years.
Oh my God. If they were to play any esport for over 100 years straight, how amazing would that be? Like, you're playing on like...
calling that right now.
Decades old hardware. Like, you know, we have to...
They would have made like an Overwatch VR version by
I guess
then.
That's true. It'd be like... ugh, gross. It'd be like emulated versions of like a 100-year-old
or everybody would just be D.Va and literally be dudes inside of like mechs like fighting each other. And they just call it Overwatch.
I mean,
you know what though? If Blizzard, I could believe Blizzard would play such long game that it would be like 100 years.
Yeah, Blizzard's not good. I mean,
like
somewhere...
they have documents that are probably like written on fucking like brass plates like down in their cellar that just like the fucking...
you open up a tome where it's like over at like Blizzard's 1,000-year plan.
I mean, Mike Morhaime is already like investing into like life longevity research and stuff.
I mean, we joke about it, but Blizzard's one of the only companies out there that has the financial backing to be able to play this long-term game.
Totally.
You know?
Like, yeah.
I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. It just makes me, I guess, like, my final thought is, like, it makes me more interested to follow this league because there's going to be so much dirt going down, especially in the early days.
Also, like, yo, this is why esports, you don't even have to like esports. You do not like video games and love reading about esports because we're in the, like, early stages of just, like, eating popcorn and, like, cackling to yourself at how crazy everything is going to be.
Yeah, it's going to get crazier before it gets, like, sorted out.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's going to get sorted out and we're going to be locked into whatever we're locked into. But I'm just enjoying the, like... wild west that
Amen,
this is
brother.
Gonna be
absolutely
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints .net
that's the website.
It's our bunker. Come on down,
bring
some candles
and some Doritos.
We are
training.
We're working on it.
Gonna stake the Bay Area. Like, what if
this is a great idea.
Yeah.
Sorry,
we're
just gonna flyer the neighborhood. Like, too late. Sorry.
We're the professional esports.
Blaze Squad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Also, you have to play Spelunky.
SF Blaze Squad. Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, your champion pool has to include the Spelunky Miner.
Oh my gosh! All right. Until next time, everyone. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.